Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, Vatican Radio helps create the first Christian radio station in the Holy Land. Looking back at some of the events in the 20th century that shaped the world we know today. And how parents and priests can challenge young people to think about the choices they make in navigating a secular and consumerist world. He has to be one of the most enterprising and most energetic people I know. Father Raed Abu Sahlia, the parish priest of Taibeh in Palestine, is a former spokesman for the Latin Patriarchate in Jerusalem. He's a big event organizer, fundraiser, and the proud sponsor of the town's impressive olive press and farmers' cooperative that sells olive oil, soaps, and candles to European supermarket chains. Well, his newest project, starting up the first Christian radio station in the Holy Land with Vatican Radio's help. He told me more about it on a recent visit here to Vatican Radio.
We need a Christian voice in the Holy Land. We need to give a Christian voice to the Christians in the Holy Land, especially to cover the whole diocese, which extends over Jordan, Palestine, and Israel. And since there are different radio stations and TV stations in the region, we don't have any Christian radio station. I wanted to do that in Taibeh, especially that Taibeh is the last and the only entirely Christian village in the whole land, as you know. And it is located at the top of a mountain, 1,000 meters above the level of the Mediterranean Sea, so we can't cover the whole region.
Have you gotten the go-ahead from the proper authorities to have your transmitting station and everything?
You know that we are in the Palestinian occupied territories in Zone B, and Zone B is under the Palestinian Authority, administratively speaking. So we had the proper permits and authorization to transmit on FM.
And where will you be broadcasting to exactly?
Our target is the Arabic-speaking community, of course. And we will transmit from Taipei. Hopefully that we will cover from Amman to Gaza to Tel Aviv, almost the whole region. And, of course, Jerusalem will be included. This will be a Christian voice, but a different voice, which means a voice of peace, of hope, of dialogue, of reconciliation. We will be open to everybody, to the other churches in the whole land, so we will have, we will give space and time for all the news and celebrations of the other churches, and we will invite them. We have already contacted them to have their own programs on our radio station. It will be open also to the other religions existing in the whole land, mainly Jews and Muslims. And we will try to be a bridge, because a Christian who is not a bridge is not a Christian.
Mm. And how many people do you think would be listening to your programs?
We don't know exactly, but we have to start. I think with the publicity we can do in our parishes, most of our Christians will listen to us. Now they are watching the Lebanese TV station Noursat Telelumière. And I saw when I visited the families that they are opening it day and night, because they have the news of the Catholics or the Christians of the whole world. And it reaches every single home. I will not pretend that we will reach every single home, but we can do that, because in all the other radio stations, they don't hear anything about religion, anything about Christianity, about the Christian, Christian faith.
And do you think that Muslims will find something attractive in this broadcast?
We hope that at least we will transmit some music, some songs, religious songs, and also news. We will not enter in politics, to tell you the truth, because we don't have problems. We have already enough problems. But social issues will be discussed. Direct programs, live programs will be there. So maybe some Christians, some Muslims will hear also our voice.
And do you plan on having just a few hours a day, or...?
No, we agreed with Monsignor Lombardi that we will have 8 hours a day, in which we will have a daily transmission of the Arabic program of the Vatican Radio.
Laudetur Jesus Christus, al-Majdu l-Yesu al-Masih, huna idaatu al-Vatican.
And they are ready, as I saw now, to provide us with other programs if necessary. So we are planning of having 8 hours repeated twice a day. And this is the reason why I am here, that we had a collaboration since the beginning to install the equipment, to buy it. And in fact, Father Lombardi dedicated an engineer to follow up. And since we are ready, we came to contact the responsibles here, and we discussed all the issues. Why? Because we would like to be also the voice of the Church of the Holy Land to the Universal Church, and at the same time, the voice of the Universal Church to the Holy Land.
It sounds like a very exciting initiative. Where did you get some of the financing for it? I know you're very good at getting financing for a lot of these projects. You have got to be one of the busiest and most active priests in the Holy Land I've ever met.
No, I'm not so very busy. I'm doing my duty, that's it. And not only as a parish priest, I launch a lot of initiatives. We receive a lot of guests, pilgrims also. I'm a good fundraiser. This is true. But I have to tell you that one of the most generous peoples in the world are the Italians, and especially the Italian Bishops' Conference. So the CHE financed also at least the equipment of this radio. I can say almost 150,000 euros. Mm-hmm. Now our problem is to find the running cost for the first year. But thanks God that the Patriarch himself promised us that through the media office of the Latin Patriarchate, he will cover the expenses of the first year at least. And we will be under the umbrella of the Latin Patriarchate, because this will not be the voice of Father Raed. It will not be the voice of Taibi only, but also the voice of the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem and all the churches of the Holy Land, and the voice of the Christians of the Holy Land.
On a practical level, how are you going? You've got some collaboration from a technician from Vatican Radio helping you there. What about journalists? What about people who can actually put the programs together?
Yeah. First of all, in the ground, there we have a team of 10 people who studied already journalism. Mm-hmm. And they are not only from Taibi, from the surrounding villages. And we agreed with Father Lombardi to send, if possible, to send two of them here, mm-hmm, for a week of training. Mm-hmm. One will be the director of this radio station. The second will be the technician. So we will have this mutual collaboration with Radio Vatican Radio, editorial collaboration, which means the content of our transmissions, including the Arabic program, and also technical collaboration. And just in this meeting, we had six of your most important professional leaders or directors in the Vatican Radio, with Father Lombardi himself, who was interested and heard our story and encouraged us. We just want to thank them for this meeting, the generosity to meet us here, and their readiness to collaborate with us in the near future.
Father Raed hopes to launch the first broadcasts of his new radio station this upcoming Christmas Eve. We wish him all the best. We left it only just a few years ago, but to many young people today, the last century will seem like light years ago. But the tumultuous events that occurred in the 20th century set the stage for much of the world we know today. In the following program, taken from her series Vatican Centuries, Jill Bevilacqua examines the 1900s, particularly the years surrounding the Second World War, and the role of the popes and the Holy See in world events. Let's listen.
The events which follow occurred within living memory. Many of today's parents and grandparents have recounted them to their children. The figures who move through these events are still too close to us to have achieved their true place in history. Posterity will judge their contribution to the progress or destruction of civilization, and consequently, of mankind.
The 30s opened with the world in the grip of the Depression. By 1931, unemployment in America had reached 12 million, in Germany 6 million, in Britain 3 million were on the dole.
But the most significant event of the decade was the burning of the Reichstag in 1933. Hitler became Chancellor, then Führer, and when he invaded Czechoslovakia and Poland, events precipitated.
By the end of 1939, the world was at war. 6 years of nightmare followed, and then the breakthrough, D-Day and the beaches of Normandy.
With peace in 1945 came the tragedy of the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The United Nations was formed. Israel became a state, India independent, and Gandhi was assassinated by a Hindu fanatic.
The communist regime was instituted in China under Mao Zedong. Apartheid adopted in South Africa. NATO formed. Germany divided into East and West.
In the 50s came the Korean War, the conquest of Everest, Queen Elizabeth II on the throne, war in Vietnam, the Hungarian Revolution.
Characteristic of the times was the speed with which existing inventions were improved and transformed. The silent screen gave way to the talkies, black and white film to colour. Radio was overtaken by television, aeroplane flight by space flight.
Literature, art and music were experimental and avant-garde. Radio and records brought light music and song to the millions, from Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra to the pop singers of our own times.
In 1961, the Berlin Wall was built and Yuri Gagarin became the first man to be launched into outer space.
But back in 1939, the idea of a man in space was still far on the horizon. In that year, as the sirens wailed and Europe was plunged once again into the abyss of total war, the bark of Peter was in the firm grip of a spare, ascetic man with gold-rimmed spectacles and a head like an ancient Roman coin.
Eugenio Pacelli was to remain at the helm for close on 20 years.
Annuncio Vobis, Gaudium Magnum, Habemus Papam.
On the 2nd of March, 1939, after only a day's voting, Eugenio Pacelli was elected Pope and took the name of Pius XII. Not since 1667 had a Secretary of State been elected. He was also the first native Roman Pope for over 200 years.
Cardinalem Pacelli.
Shortly before the outbreak of war in 1939, Pope Pius XII spoke to the world through the microphones of Vatican Radio.
Minaccio è il pericolo, ma è ancora tempo. Nulla è perduto con la pace. Tutto può esserlo con la guerra. Ritornino gli uomini a comprendersi.
His appeal, "Nothing is lost with peace, all could be lost with war," fell on deaf ears. But from that time on, the popes have made appeals for peace a distinctive sign of the modern papacy.
During the Second World War, an information office was set up in the Vatican to search for missing persons. The Pope offered the services of the radio, and from 1940 to 1946, over 1 million messages were sent over the air to the relatives of POWs and missing persons. It was during the pontificate of Pius XII that Vatican Radio began broadcasting on an international scale.
As the war raged about him, Pope Pius XII made constant attempts to regain peace. He met King Victor Emmanuel of Italy. He wrote letters to Mussolini to try and prevent Italy's siding with Germany. He relayed messages from the German resistance to the Allies. And when on July the 19th, 1943, Rome was bombed, the Pope went in person to the district of San Lorenzo to comfort his people.
Pius XII believed he must remain neutral and use diplomatic methods. Fearful of the advance of communism and preoccupied with this, he provoked Stalin's famous remark, "How many divisions has the Pope?"
In 1949, Pius decreed excommunication for the supporters of communism. And when the Russians suppressed the revolt in Hungary in 1956, the Pope said in his Christmas message, "Out of respect for the name of Christian, compliance with such tactics must cease. For as the Apostle warns, it is inconsistent to wish to sit at the table of God and at that of his enemies."
A fellow feeling on the subject was shared by another great leader of the time, Winston Churchill. He wrote in his war memoirs of a visit he paid to Pius XII in 1944.
"The Pope received me in his study with the dignity and informality which he can so happily combine. We had no lack of topics for conversation. The one that bulked the largest at this audience, as it had done with his predecessor 18 years before, was the danger of communism. I have always had the greatest dislike of it, and should I ever have the honor of another audience with the Supreme Pontiff, I should not hesitate to recur to the subject."
The figure of Pius XII stands today in partial shadow, too close to us still for an accurate assessment to be made of his long pontificate and his complex personality. Time will rectify the balance. In his last years, the Pope became an ever more remote and solitary figure, ascetical and withdrawn. When he walked in the Vatican gardens of an afternoon, he wished to see no one as he strode up and down reading.
But despite this remoteness, Pius XII was deeply loved by the Roman people. He was a native Roman. It mattered not that he was an aristocrat. He belonged to them. And when he spoke to them, it was familiarly, conversationally, as a father to a large family.
"Ritornino gli uomini a comprendersi, riprendano a trattare, trattando con buona volontà e con rispetto dei reciproci diritti."
That was Chapter 44, Towards a New Pentecost, of Jill Bevilacqua's series, Vatican Centuries. As a parent, I know it's not easy to guide kids through the stormy waters and perilous pitfalls that they encounter as they grow up in an increasingly secular and consumerist world. Temptations like drugs, alcohol, sex, even crime. It's difficult for any parent to lay down a law that can so easily or secretly be circumvented by a rebellious child who figures mom's just being old-fashioned. Well, I asked Father Bernie O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches, how parents and priests, for that matter, can challenge young people to think carefully about the choices they make and act responsibly.
I'm reminded of a story which is told, it's hundreds of years old, about Ignatius of Loyola. And he encountered this nice young man on the steps of Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. and they were chit-chatting, and the comment was made, what are you going to do with your life? And the young fellow said, well, I'm going to go to university and study. And then what? Well, I think I'll become a lawyer, perhaps even a judge. And then what? Well, I will marry and I will try to get politically involved. And then what? Oh, and the fellow got very upset. I'll grow old and I'll die. To which Ignatius said, and then what? The young man's name, by the way, was Francis Xavier. Very interesting that in our interactions with young people, I think there's two things we're forgetting. One of them is the idealism of youth, and the other is the realism of youth. I look at the Obama campaign, the election, and how many thought that by making a radical choice, the world would change. By my putting in that man, the political scene worldwide would change and everything would be cured of the years of the Bush administration. That was the popular perception in Europe. But it was the rhetoric of the young who believed that almost for the first time in their life, they were actually affecting political and social change. Well, the truth of that reality and the reliability of their interpretation is still being critiqued and still being challenged. But I think what the church can learn from all of this is that those surveys, for example, which indicate that the young are departing our ranks in huge numbers, but still think of themselves as spiritual, though not religious, or as spiritual and religious, but not in a formal way. Well, let's examine that. What does that mean? And is there any manner in which, in our conversation with young, we can help them ask, what does it mean for me to be spiritual? What do they have in mind with that? Is there any way we can tap into it? Young people tell me constantly, oh, I'm spiritual. But when I press them on the point, and then what, like Ignatius to Xavier, they get exasperated and frustrated. Because their own idealism and their own realism, they have no answer to it. They're both areas of their life are completely without answer. And sometimes the greatest gift we can give a young person is to point out that fact to them very gently. You profess being spiritual, but I'm sorry, I don't understand you. That's incoherent. You profess being spiritual and open to your fellow man, but I don't see anything different than a very self-interested kind of agenda, which is anything but charity. Tell me what you mean. I remember one time a priest, an elderly priest, saying to me, you know, Bernie, I've learned in ministry that the best way to get people's attention is to say, I need help, and I don't know what to do. When you pretend or convey that you have all the answers and all the solutions, they run away. But when you say, I don't understand, can you help me? Youth particularly are very eager to come to the door and say, I heard you need some assistance with your computer. I'm good at computers. Excellent. Let's look at that. And then you talk. Most young people will tell you of their disillusionment and anger and frustration with the church. The advice I give to clergy is don't be defensive. If that's their experience and that's their position, hear it and ask why, and then probe their idealism, their realism, rather along the line of St. Ignatius with Xavier. There's a lot of hope in this, but let's not be afraid when young people say, we need something new and different. Fine, let's create it.
Just that we hope that it won't be drugs or premarital sex or alcohol.
And there's no question that those influences within our society have exerted their toll, no question about it. And for many young people, the church is absolutely inept and incapable of contributing to their lives. And if that's the impression we've left them with, I pray God it's not the impression we will continue to leave them with. I'm going to give you an example. I have a little formula that I recommend to persons entering marriage. And I tell them this is Father Bernie's anti-divorce formula. And they laugh at me and they twitter and have a great little time. I say I have a little program, takes about 15 minutes a day. And if you do it, chances are you won't end up in the divorce court. And people say, Bernie, what is it? Quick, what is it? At the end of every day, one spouse looks at the other mutually and they have three questions for each other. Have I hurt you today? Let's talk about that. Have I been a blessing in any way to you today? Let's talk about that. And has the face of God been shown in our relationship to us this day? These are tough questions, and they can become routine mighty fast. I find with many young people to whom I speak, the person they're living with for that particular moment in their lives, they're into serial monogamy, a number of them, can't ask those questions. And they'll say, oh, Father Bernie, don't be so foolish. That's unrealistic. It's idealistic. It's pious. I say, yes. But it's also the reality that if you're going to take relationships seriously, I'm here to try to help you by my experience of relationships to help you look at yours and what you mean by relationship. Very honestly, many young people haven't the foggiest notion of what commitment entails. It's simply randomness and immediate preference. And my obligation is to say, let's not lie to ourselves, which are the greatest lies we'll ever tell, but let's look at each other straight in the eye and be able to say, who are we and who is God for us, without pretense and without the veneer of what amounts to theater. There's a challenge. You know, during the marriage ceremony, when I officiated a marriage, publicly I give the couple a number of gifts. These are personal. They're not from the parish. They're from me. I always present them with the Bible from which their nuptial liturgy readings were read, proclaimed. And I inscribe it with a reference to the readings that were chosen for their liturgy. And I write a reading in the Bible given to this couple this day, in the hope that you will regularly reread the texts that were chosen for your liturgy. I also give them a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and I give them a subscription to some readable information magazine or journal to come to the home that will keep them updated about basic Catholic teaching, Catholic Digest or something of that nature. And I make this publicly to try to convey that the Word of God in Scripture and the Word of God within our church tradition speaks today if we welcome it and not merely allow the church to be a theater piece because the pictures will turn out nice for our ceremony, but rather to say that this liturgy celebrates a commitment. Commitment is tough stuff, but together it can be the most exhilarating, fulfilling, satisfying and joyful reality that's on the face of the earth.
And a warm thanks there to Father Bernie O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.